Chapter 11. Bit better than the forces arrayed against you than the police, for instance. The other day I came suddenly upon Chief Inspector Heat at the corner of Tottenham Court Road. He looked at me very steadily. But I did not look at him. Why should I give him more than a glance? He was thinking of many things, of his superiors, of his reputation, of the law courts, of his salary, of newspapers, of 100 things. But I was thinking of my perfect detonator only. He meant nothing to me. He was as insignificant as I can't call to mind anything insignificant enough to compare him with, except Carl Jung, perhaps. Like to like. The terrorist and the policeman both come from the same basket. Revolution, legality, counter moves in the same game. Forms of idleness at bottom identical. He plays his little game, so do you propagandists. But I don't play. I work 14 hours a day, and go hungry sometimes. My experiments cost money now and again, and then I must do without food for a day or two. You're looking at my beer. Yes. I have had 2 glasses already, and shall have another presently. This is a little holiday, and I celebrate it alone. Why not? I've the grit to work alone, quite alone, absolutely alone. I've worked alone for years. Ossipon's face had turned dusky red. At the perfect detonator, eh? He sneered, very low. Yes, retorted the other. T is a good definition. You couldn't find anything half so precise to define the nature of your activity with all your committees and delegations. It is I who am the true propagandist. We won't discuss that point, said Ossipon, with an air of rising above personal considerations. I'm afraid I'll have to spoil your holiday for you, though. There's a man blown up in Greenwich Park this morning. How do you know? They have been yelling the news in the streets since 2 o'clock. I bought the paper, and just ran in here. Then I saw you sitting at this table. I've got it in my pocket now. He pulled the newspaper out. It was a good-sized rosy sheet, as if flushed by the warmth of its own convictions, which were optimistic. He scanned the pages rapidly. Ah, here it is. Bomb in Greenwich Park. There isn't much so far. 11:30. Foggy morning. Effects of explosion felt as far as Romney Road and Park Plus. Enormous hole in the ground under a tree filled with smashed roots and broken branches. All round fragments of a man's body blown to pieces. That's all. The rest's mere newspaper gup. No doubt a wicked attempt to blow up the observatory, they say. H'm. That's hardly credible. He looked at the paper for a while longer in silence, then passed it to the other, who, after gazing abstractedly at the print, laid it down without comment. It was Ossipon who spoke first, still resentful. The fragments of only one man, you note. Ergo. Blew himself up. That spoils your day off for you, don't it? Were you expecting that sort of move? I hadn't the slightest idea, not the ghost of a notion of anything of the sort, being planned to come off here in this country. Under the present circumstances, it's nothing short of criminal. The little man lifted his thin black eyebrows with dispassionate scorn. Criminal? What is that? What is crime? What can be the meaning of such an assertion? How am I to express myself? One must use the current words, said Ossipon impatiently. The meaning of this assertion is that this business may affect our position very adversely in this country. Isn't that crime enough for you? I am convinced you have been giving away some of your stuff lately. Ossipon stared hard. The other, without flinching, lowered and raised his head slowly. You have, burst out the editor of the FP leaflets in an intense whisper. Oh, and are you really handing it over at large like this? For the asking, to the first fool that comes along? Just so. The condemned social order has not been built up on paper and ink, and I don't fancy that a combination of paper and ink will ever put an end to it, whatever you may think. Yes, I would give the stuff with both hands to every man, woman, or fool that likes to come along. I know what you are thinking about. But I am not taking my cue from the Red Committee. I would see you all hounded out of here, or arrested or beheaded for that matter without turning a hair. What happens to us as individuals is not of the least consequence. He spoke carelessly, without heat, almost without feeling, and Ossipon, secretly much affected, tried to copy his detachment. If the police here knew their business, they would shoot you full of holes with revolvers, or else try to sandbag you from behind in broad daylight. The little man seemed already to have considered that point of view in his dispassionate, self-confident manner. Yes, he assented with the utmost readiness. But for that, they would have to face their own institutions. Do you see? That requires uncommon grit. Grit of a special kind. Ossipon blinked. I fancy that's exactly what would happen to you if you were to set up your laboratory in the States. They don't stand on ceremony with their institutions there. I am not likely to go and see. Otherwise your remark is just, admitted the other. They have more character over there, and their character is essentially anarchistic. Fertile ground for us, the States very good ground. The Great Republic has the root of the destructive matter in her. The collective temperament is lawless. Excellent. They may shoot us down, but you are too transcendental for me, growled Ossipon, with moody concern. Logical, protested the other. Here are several kinds of logic. This is the enlightened kind. America is all right. It is this country that is dangerous, with her idealistic conception of legality. The social spirit of this people is wrapped up in scrupulous prejudices, and that is fatal to our work. You talk of England being our only refuge. So much the worse. Capua. What do we want with refuges? Here you talk, print, plot, and do nothing. I dare say it's very convenient for such Carl Jungs. He shrugged his shoulders slightly, then added with the same leisurely assurance : to break up the superstition and worship of legality should be our aim. Nothing would please me more than to see Inspector Heat and his likes take to shooting us down in broad daylight with the approval of the public. Half our battle would be won then. The disintegration of the old morality would have set in its very temple. That is what you ought to aim at. But you revolutionizers will never understand that. You plan the future, you lose yourselves in reveries of economical systems derived from what is, whereas what's wanted is a clean sweep and a clear start for a new conception of life. That sort of future will take care of itself if you will only make room for it. Therefore I would shovel my stuff in heaps at the corners of the streets if I had enough for that. And as I haven't, I do my best by perfecting a really dependable detonator. Ossipon, who had been mentally swimming in deep waters, seized upon the last word as if it were a saving plank. Yes, your detonators. I shouldn't wonder if it weren't one of your detonators that made a clean sweep of the man in the park. A shade of vexation darkened the determined sallow face confronting Ossipon. My difficulty consists precisely in experimenting practically with the various kinds. They must be tried after all. Besides, Ossipon interrupted. Who could that fellow be? I assure you that we in London had no knowledge. Couldn't you describe the person you gave the stuff to? The other turned his spectacles upon Ossipon like a pair of searchlights. Describe him, he repeated slowly. Don't think there can be the slightest objection now. I will describe him to you in one word: Verloc. Ossipon, whom curiosity had lifted a few inches off his seat, dropped back, as if hit in the face. Verloc. Impossible. The self-possessed little man nodded slightly once. Yes. He's the person. You can't say that in this case I was giving my stuff to the first fool that came along. He was a prominent member of the group as far as I understand. Yes, said Ossipon. Prominent. No, not exactly. He was the center for general intelligence, and usually received comrades coming over here. More useful than important. Man of no ideas. Years ago he used to speak at meetings in France, I believe. Not very well, though. He was trusted by such men as Ladder, Moser, and all that old lot. The only talent he showed really was his ability to elude the attentions of the police somehow. Here, for instance, he did not seem to be looked after very closely. He was regularly married, you know. I suppose it's with her money that he started that shop. Seemed to make it pay too. Ossipon paused abruptly, muttered to himself, "Wonder what that woman will do now," and fell into thought. The other waited with ostentatious indifference. His parentage was obscure, and he was generally known only by his nickname of Professor. His title to that designation consisted in his having been once assistant demonstrator in chemistry at some technical institute. He quarreled with the authorities upon a question of unfair treatment. Afterwards, he obtained a post in the laboratory of a manufactory of dyes. There, too, he had been treated with revolting injustice. His struggles, his privations, his hard work to raise himself in the social scale, had filled him with such an exalted conviction of his merits that it was extremely difficult for the world to treat him with justice, the standard of that notion depending so much upon the patience of the individual. The professor had genius, but lacked the great social virtue of resignation. Intellectually a nonentity, Ossipon pronounced aloud, abandoning suddenly the inward contemplation of Mrs. Verloc's bereaved person and business. Quite an ordinary personality. You are wrong in not keeping more in touch with the comrades, Professor, he added in a reproving tone. Did he say anything to you, give you some idea of his intentions? I hadn't seen him for a month. It seems impossible that he should be gone. He told me it was going to be a demonstration against a building, said the professor. Had to know that much to prepare the missile. I pointed out to him that I had hardly a sufficient quantity for a completely destructive result, but he pressed me very earnestly to do my best. As he wanted something that could be carried openly in the hand, I proposed to make use of an old 1 gallon copal varnish can I happened to have by me. He was pleased at the idea. It gave me some trouble, because I had to cut out the bottom first, and solder it on again afterwards. When prepared for use, the can enclosed a wide-mouthed, well-corked jar of thick glass packed around with some wet clay and containing 16 ounces of X2 green powder. The detonator was connected with the screw top of the can. It was ingenious, a combination of time and shock. I explained the system to him. It was a thin tube of tin enclosing a. Ossipon's attention had wandered. What do you think has happened? He interrupted. Can't tell. Screwed the top on tight, which would make the connection, and then forgot the time. It was set for 20 minutes. On the other hand, the time contact being made, a sharp shock would bring about the explosion at once. He either ran the time too close, or simply let the thing fall. The contact was made all right, that's clear to me at any rate. The systems worked perfectly. And yet you would think that a common fool in a hurry would be much more likely to forget to make the contact altogether. I was worrying myself about that sort of failure mostly. But there are more kinds of fools than one can guard against. You can't expect a detonator to be absolutely foolproof. He beckoned to a waiter. Ossipon sat rigid, with the abstracted gaze of mental travail. After the man had gone away with the money, he roused himself, with an air of profound dissatisfaction. It's extremely unpleasant for me, he mused. Arla's been in bed with bronchitis for a week. There's an even chance that he will never get up again. Michaelis is luxuriating in the country somewhere. A fashionable publisher has offered him £500 for a book. It will be a ghastly failure. He has lost the habit of consecutive thinking in prison, you know. The professor on his feet, now buttoning his coat, looked about him with perfect indifference. What are you going to do? Asked Ossipon wearily. He dreaded the blame of the Central Red Committee, a body which had no permanent place of abode, and of whose membership he was not exactly informed. If this affair eventuated in the stoppage of the modest subsidy allotted to the publication of the FP pamphlets, then indeed he would have to regret Verloc's inexplicable folly. Solidarity with the extremist form of action is one thing, and silly recklessness is another, he said, with a sort of moody brutality. Don't know what came to Verloc. There's some mystery there. However, he's gone. You may take it as you like, but under the circumstances the only policy for the militant revolutionary group is to disclaim all connection with this damned freak of yours. How to make the disclaimer convincing enough is what bothers me. The little man on his feet, buttoned up and ready to go, was no taller than the seated Ossipon. He leveled his spectacles at the latter's face point blank. You might ask the police for a testimonial of good conduct. They know where every one of you slept last night. Perhaps if you asked them, they would consent to publish some sort of official statement. No doubt they are aware well enough that we had nothing to do with this, mumbled Ossipon bitterly. That they will say is another thing. He remained thoughtful, disregarding the short, owlish, shabby figure standing by his side. Must lay hands on Michaelis at once, and get him to speak from his heart at one of our gatherings. The public has a sort of sentimental regard for that fellow. His name is known. And I am in touch with a few reporters. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.